I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Death of a Salesman, the American classic, is one of the plays that's in rotation right now at American Players Theater in Spring Green. It opened on June 18, and it continues through September 16 at the Up the Hill Theater. The play, of course, written by Arthur Miller, and if you have not seen it before, you should see it. If you have seen it, it's a play that stays with you, I think, for your whole lifetime. It won the 1949 Pulitzer Prize. The director of the show at ABT, Kenneth Albers, who's played Willie Loman several times, including a memorable production at the Milwaukee Rep, says, "People will see someone behaving like they do. Everybody's going to go through what he goes through, and Willie goes through, that is, a world of employment that's smaller, losing your sense of self, your identity as you get older." The play centers on Willie Loman, a salesman who's been a salesman for 34 years. He's 63 years old, and he has been cast aside. He's told his sons, Biff and Hap, "Be liked and you will never want. Think big and exude confidence." He has just a few days left of his life, actually, when the play begins, and he wanders in memories of a past that just wasn't necessarily so. Joining us this hour to talk about the play and also to talk about, I love talking about American Players Theater because I remember talking with the founders of this theater many, many, many years ago when it was just a dream that they had, and now it's almost 40 years old, and it's just wonderful that it has survived. It's a beautiful place, and they're doing gorgeous, memorable productions. Brian Manny is one of our guests. Brian is in his 17th season at American Players Theater. He plays Willie Loman. The first production that he says he ever saw of Death of a Salesman was Kenneth's performance at the Milwaukee Rep. Last year, he's done a lot of roles. I'm just mentioning a few. He was featured as Falstaff in The Merry Wives of Windsor, also has appeared as in Othello, Pride and Prejudice, Donnie in American Buffalo. He's been in Of Mice and Men, Waiting for Godot, Falstaff in Henry IV, The Making of a King, and many other productions. And Brian, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Also joining us is Tracy Michelle Arnold, and she plays Willie Loman's wife. She's in her 17th APT season as well. She's appeared in so many shows, to mention a few: Blanche in A Streetcar Named Desire, Margaret in Richard III, Irene Malloy in The Matchmaker, Anne in Shakespeare's Will, and many other productions. Tracy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You know, I love what I do, but there's no place I'd rather be today than Spring Green, Wisconsin, getting ready to attend a show tonight. It is just, you must feel just fortunate to have this place to be able to do your craft, don't you? It's just so important and so beautiful.
I'm amazed that it's here in Southwest Wisconsin. I was amazed when it started, and I'm amazed that it's here 37 years later?
Is it, Tracy, do you know, is it 37? It's close to 40, I know, so it must be.
Oh, gosh, my first season was 99, and they were celebrating their 20th season then. So, someone do the math.
So, it's close.
It's my 17th season, so it must be 37.
Yeah, and I tell this story every year. I was working for another radio station years ago when the three founders had this dream, and they had settled on Spring Green, and it looked like it might become a reality, and I still can't believe, and I'm so thankful that all these years later, and tell me why you think it is, there it is, still doing these terrific plays with wonderful actors, and it's lived for so long.
Well, I think the stories, especially in the beginning, they mostly only did Shakespeare, and mm-hmm. we still mainly do Shakespeare, but we're branching out into a lot of different playwrights, modern and classic. But they would do Chekhov and Shakespeare and Ibsen, and I think these are they're classics for a reason. They have great messages, and they have great insight into the foibles of human beings, and we get to see them played out.
Mm-hmm. The artistic director of the Milwaukee Rep said that what got him in theater really was Death of a Salesman, and he wanted to stage it at the Rep, which he did a few years ago. He talked about Miller's play being like Shakespeare, and that both of these playwrights would be performed, maybe side by side, maybe in Spring Green, in the next 1,000 years. They'll still be on stage. Do you think that's true, Tracy?
Oh, gosh, it's hard. I hope it's true. I hope it's true, and as a woman, as a woman of a certain age, Kathleen, I hope that the stories that are about women have grown tremendously in 1,000 years, and that we're seeing more women-centric plays. I'm not complaining. I have probably the most incredible job I can think of as an actor, and I'm very grateful to have it. But it's an interesting thing as I get older and play lots of wives and mothers, and watch lots of plays that are driven by the stories of men, and not surprisingly so, as we've had a country that has been driven by men, a world that has been driven by men. I'm hopeful that we will start to see a little more equality in all things, including playwriting. Mm-hmm. But I don't see why these stories should ever die, because there is a universality in the human experience, and this beautiful story of Willie and his struggle is not just a man's story. The idea that we should, the idea that we should dream and hope in a big, broad way is a wonderful thing. The idea that we should dream and hope beyond anything within our realistic grasp can be a dangerous thing if you're going to be crushed by not being able to attain those hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very human story, and that men and women can relate to the idea of getting to the last portion of their life, whatever age they might be, and thinking to themselves, gosh, when I was 20 or 30, did I envision myself here?
Mm-hmm.
I always think stories like that are worth telling. The examination of how we come to accept ourselves or reject ourselves is going to be universal, I think, always.
Yeah.
So there's a reason these stories just keep being told.
Right. Mm-hmm. Brian, this is a big role to play, isn't it, Willie Loman? I mean, it's an internal thing that's going on. It's reflecting on a lifetime. It's reflecting on dreams, and also a bit of madness setting in. It's a huge presence on the stage, isn't it? I would imagine as an actor, you might think, Willie Loman, I'm going to play Willie Loman? It's somewhat intimidating, isn't it?
Well, I've always thought of playing this role, and I never knew what was going to happen. And then last summer, when Brenda DeVita mentioned to me that we're going to do it and you're going to do it, I suddenly thought, already? Now?
I'm too young.
Yeah, I know. I thought I got to grow up for this one.
Right.
And in many ways, because it is a huge role, and it got larger as we went. To realize the scope of it, and Ken, as you had mentioned in the intro, has played the role 3 times, and he realized what the scope of that thing was, and he gave me some insights on how to fight my way through it. But it's so large, and I've finally, like anything that we get used to, that we start to comprehend, it gets smaller, and so I've shrunk it a little bit, but it's going to be a humbling experience, I think, all through the summer. And I hope I'm lucky enough in my life to get to play it another time or two.
Hmm.
Because to have the experience of playing Willie and start a new production would be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's something.
Mm-hmm. Put it in the context, if you will, both of you, of sort of this American dream thing. There's something about this play I think about, and I know that many of you do too, our parents or our grandparents, particularly our fathers, because it's Willie Loman. My dad was a salesman, couldn't go to college, depression going on, and and what he could have been, he talked about frequently. And I cry every time I see this play. I've seen it several times because that American dream that if he had only had the chance, he probably could have done really big things. He was a really good man and a good provider and salt of the earth and a wonderful guy. But for him, it wasn't all that he wanted. And I'm wondering if there's something... and Tracy, let's start with you, that there's something universal about this American dream and that subsequent generations have had maybe the same problem that Willie has had or different problems, a variation on a theme of the American dream. What is it now? What resonates from 1949?
Well, I wasn't alive in 1949, so I'm not sure what resonates from then, but I can say... As a parent, and my child's young, he's 7.5 years old, but as a parent now, I have a much deeper understanding of what it is to dream for your children, just sort of dream beyond yourself for the future. And Willie does have very big dreams for his sons.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if we're being selfish with the term American dream as Americans, in that I think all... people have dreams. All people have dreams for their children, and all people wish they could have a better life. I'm sure no matter what your status, you think you can do a little bit better, whether it be financial, which is what a lot of this play kind of hinges on, but financially, morally, can you do more to help your fellow man? Can you be a kinder husband? Can you be a more understanding parent? Can you be a more assertive human being in your life? You know, I think everyone comes to the end of their life thinking, if only I really do think that's the universality in the play, you know, and it's framed in such a way that it's set in a time period in America, and it's the salesman is given a profession that was particularly hard. But I really think it is an everyman story. I think that's why you mentioned the artistic director of Milwaukee Rep, Mark Clemens, said that this and Shakespeare would still be on stage in 1,000 years. It's because there's a universality to the human experience,
mm-hmm.
In the idea that human beings can dream beyond what they think is possible. And sometimes we see human beings attain such things,
mm-hmm.
and that gives the rest of us hope. And also, when we see human beings fail at achieving their dreams, that makes the rest of us feel like we're not alone,
right.
Which is the marvel of theater. It's why I think this theater exists in the middle of Wisconsin. I think it's why theaters exist in general, so that 1,000 or 100 or 50, however many people are sitting out there in the dark experiencing this story with us.
Hmm. But there's also...
It's because it's like a... It's a communal experience for us all to
realize. Oh, it is indeed.
How like one another we are.
But isn't there, Brian, also a theme of human beings being expendable?
Yeah, that's that is what Willie is going through. He's there's a question as to whether how good he ever was as a salesman.
Right.
He was good enough to get a house together and a mortgage, but. There are hints in the play that, at least in the flashbacks, which take place in the mid-30s, that he's got a lot of... He brags a lot about what he's done, but he hasn't really made what he wanted. And he had a dream. You hear about his dream in the 30s of having a business of his own so that he wouldn't have to go out on the road as much. But that doesn't get realized. We realize in the present of the play in 1949, that's not so. He has... failed. And so I think a lot of it is his age. You know, there's a comment in the Requiem where, you know, you get a spot on your hat and you're living on a shoeshine and a smile, and when things start to go south for you, the shine of that salesman goes away, and you're not the winning personality that I guess a salesman really has to be. So he's feeling loss all around him,
mm-hmm.
Compounded with the foibles of his own life, and he's lost. He's he starts the play facing the last 24 hours of his life. And he kind of knows it from the beginning, I think.
It's such a sad play to me in many ways. Is it to you, Tracy? It's just sad. It makes me cry every time I see it.
Well, yes. That's my one word answer is yes. It is a sad play to me. And when we first were rehearsing it, I couldn't stop myself from being emotional. I'm an emotional person as it is, which is very helpful when you're an actor.
I'm sure it is.
It's a very handy thing to have in your toolkit to be emotional. But Ken, our director, Ken Albers, kept pulling me back from that and pulling me back from it and pulling me back from it, saying he less. Never really completely telling me why that was, but I really trust his eye as a director. And it started to make me think of my own mother, actually, who I rarely seen cry in my lifetime. And I think of these people who have lived harder lives than I, harder times, like living through the Depression, just harder times in general. And it made me start thinking about what Linda's life must have been like before she met Willie. And, you know, Arthur Miller doesn't give you any indication of that. So it's just something that an actor kind of makes up on their own. But what kind of a person can reserve the many feelings Linda must have of anxiety, of disappointment, of fear, of worry? You know, she's such a strong woman, and is able to hold it all together. How has she managed to teach herself to be so strong? And I think it is because she has been through many, many, many trials. So after a while, she realizes that taking the time to cry doesn't do her any good. It's not helping anything. She's very pragmatic in that way, much more than I am. Very pragmatic. So I have a deep appreciation for Linda and for women like her. But is it a sad play? It is. But I don't think that should discourage anyone.
Oh, heavens, no. No, not at all. No, we see things that are sad all the time. Absolutely. There's the tragedy, right? There are tragedies. Brian,
well, there are lessons to be learned from tragedy is the point.
Right.
We don't just go to see it to be sad. We go to see it to learn, to watch someone else maybe make missteps in their lives. Missteps that we may have made or may have the ability to make, to watch them do it in front of us is a great lesson for us, is a great teacher for us to either think twice before you go down that road or you've gone down that road. Now, what do you do to fix it so you don't get that messy?
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about the American Players Theater and more specifically about Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, which is one of the plays in rotation at the Up the Hill Theater this summer. It runs through in rotation September 16. Two of the actors are with us. Brian Manny is playing Willie Loman in the production, and Tracy Michelle Arnold is playing Linda Loman in the production that has been receiving rave reviews. We're welcoming phone calls. I know it just opened very recently, but some of you may have had a chance to see their production of Death of a Salesman. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter at K Dunn Show. In case you haven't seen the show, I know that many of you have been to American Players Theater to see other shows, and there are some I'm sure that you'll remember always, so feel free to call about those as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. American Players Theater and Death of a Salesman this hour. We start our calls, and we have many of them. Great. Rich in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen and Mr. Manny and Ms. Arnold. If I want to be sad, I'll watch the Kardashians on television. and I was around in 1949, although I was very young. I'm an older man now, and I thought I had seen Death of a Salesman. But what I want to say about the pacing and the acting and the production is that it is so superb. This is not a short play, and it takes some time to get through. And I went with two couples, and we were all absolutely blown away by the production. I sit in that amphitheater, and I think back to when I first heard Kathleen interviewing Randall Duke Kim.
Oh, do you really?
And,
oh,
yes,
Rich.
And Tony Randall. And I hike a lot in the hills of Wisconsin with my dogs, and for the life of me, I can't believe the inspiration that theater people have when they can actually look at a hillside and say a theater belongs here. One last comment. I saw Mr. Manny in David Mamet's American Buffalo a year ago. Everyone should see this man act. I saw him as Arnold in Shakespeare's Will in the 2012 season, I think it was. That was a one-woman show. Wisconsinites or people from anywhere around who do not take advantage of the productions of American Players Theater are just missing out on some of the very best theater, I would say, not only in the country, but in the world. I really mean that.
Oh, Rich, I'm so glad you called. Well, that was nice. Brian?
That's very nice.
I know. And he goes way back to the beginning of the theater, too.
Yeah. My first summer here, I got to spend, it was Randy Kim's last summer.
Oh, was it?
So I got to act with him for one summer, and man, was he a presence on stage.
Yes, he was.
Even on stage, it was intimidating. He was really he was like a creature up there. It was amazing, amazing to be with.
And a remarkable ability to make Shakespeare so completely understandable.
He completely owned that language. Mm-hmm. Every fiber of his being was what was going on there. It was incredible.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous that Brian got to meet him, because I've never met him. And I've only ever seen a YouTube clip of Randy doing Shylock from The Merchant of Venice, and I'm completely riveted by it.
Oh, my God.
Randy, if you're listening, I mean, I wanted him to come back to this theater since I started here, because I want to shake his hand. I met my husband at this theater.
Oh,
we
did
have a
you?
Child. Aww. We live in Spring Green. He's an actor at APT. So, you know, the fact that I have this life in this idyllic town and get to be a theater actor is really all due to the fact that Randy and Annie Occhiogrosso, you know, found this place and decided to put a theater here. I've always wanted to shake his hand and say thank you for my life.
Right. Thanks.
So if you're listening, Randy, thank you.
And to so many people in Wisconsin for having this theater there. It's just thanks to them. Thanks to them every day. Thanks, Rich, for your call. Corey is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great, great. I just kind of listening to some of the other comments you're going on in the show, and I just highly recommend seeing the show. It's just an outstanding production. Every bit of it was incredibly well done. The casting overall, I've never been fortunate enough to see Randy on stage. I've been going to the theater since the late 90s. But I tell you what, you guys that are on the stage right now, I'm sure we're going to be saying the same thing about you. This is just an absolutely incredible production, and I highly recommend people get out there and go see this play.
Thanks, Corey. Tracy, you guys are getting rave reviews, huh?
Not 2 out of 2, ain't bad.
No, it's not bad at all. Not bad at all. Do you have a preference? I know both of you go back and forth. You're doing Shakespeare, you're doing American classics. It's become a real variety of important and well-done theater. Tell me about when the change was made to go from all Shakespeare to American classics and how it's decided what you're going to be performing every year.
I'm not sure I can. I think the whole board and the artistic staff searches for the plays and helps decide on the plays that we're going to do. We started doing American classics. Tracy, you'll have to help me. I know that we did Thornton Wilder. We did Matchmaker back in 2003.
Right. Well, well before my time, Our Town was done.
Oh,
that
yes,
was probably
true.
The first American classic.
Was it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some were sprinkled in.
And I know that in the early days, they also did Chekhov. They did some one acts. So it wasn't exclusively Shakespeare. It was just primarily Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They did, you know, they did Moliere. They did Ibsen, Chekhov. But I think the American classic started, must have started when David came along. And I'm sorry, I can't tell you what year those started.
And I do know that David Frank, the previous artistic director, I do know that he highlighted something, spoke out loud and said, what I really am enjoying is seeing the marriage between the spoken word and fine American acting, the kind of American acting that, you know, Marlon Brando cracked open in this country.
Hmm.
And he said, you know, as opposed to, give me an example of an old English actor doing Shakespeare, like
Ralph
Olivier.
Ralph Richardson, then. Olivier.
Yes.
Gielgud.
The idea of marrying those two things, language that is heightened and spoken clearly, and acting that is realistic and emotionally truthful,
mm-hmm.
was exciting to David. And so the next step, the next logical step, was to, once he felt like he really had a handle on doing that with what we consider more classical work like Shakespeare or Moliere or Chekhov, then he decided to actually throw his hand in American texts that we also consider to be classic.
Yeah. Let's talk a little, because a lot has been written and said about Arthur Miller's use of language and use of dialogue in Death of a Salesman and in his other plays, that he had a brilliance for being able to capture authentic dialogue. Do both of you as actor and actresses feel that this is true? Is there something about the script that rings particularly true and beautiful at the same time?
It does to me. With many playwrights, with many, let's say, contemporary playwrights, or even playwrights from the mid to late 20th century, I'll first speak of Shakespeare. When you get Shakespeare wrong, you know it. And what I find with more contemporary playwrights is not necessarily all the time. With Arthur Miller, I find that his prose is very poetic. I find when I hit a wrong note with the juxtaposition of a couple of words, or if I miss something, I get off kilter, because the play is beautifully written in that way. Some of the rhythms, he puts an understand in there as a, rather than a hem or a haw that most people do. And it sets the tone. Right now, it feels like it's 1949 when I speak. It feels of an era when I speak it, but it feels immediate as well. He had all my sons on Broadway, and it was his first big success. And that was when Streetcar Named Desire came out, and he was inspired by Williams' use of language, which I think bounced back into Salesman. Arthur Miller felt emboldened by Williams, which Tracy could speak to.
Right, you were in Streetcar, weren't you, Tracy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there was some review that was saying that the juxtaposition of the openings of Streetcar and Salesman were just about the same time span as we have this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were 14 or 16 months between them on Broadway when they first premiered, and this year they're about 12 months apart. So.
Hmm. Will you speak to this too, please, Tracy, the language?
Yeah, I found it harder to learn than Shakespeare.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Actually, once you've learned Shakespeare, after a while it becomes easier, because he's written in such a pattern that you, just like Brian said, when you miss something or get it wrong, you almost feel it, like missing a stair step, walking down a flight of stairs and missing a step.
Uh-huh.
That's how it feels in your body when you miss a line in Shakespeare, because he's written, at least when you're speaking verse, he's written in such a pattern that you're used to the pattern.
Yeah.
But these contemporary playwrights, well, we consider them classical American playwrights, I should say, like Williams, like Miller, they have their own style as well. And having done, now I here at APT, I got to do Thornton Wilder in The Matchmaker. I got to do Blanche DuBois in Streetcar, and Maxine in Night of the Iguana, also Tennessee Williams. And now Linda, they're wildly different voices. Wildly different. There is their own. They have their own. I want to call it a dialect, and it's more pronounced, obviously, in a Tennessee Williams play in the South. But they all have their own dialect. Like in Arthur Miller, I have to say the phrase go down the cellar." I never say "I'm going down to the cellar," which is what Tracy would say. I say "I went down the cellar." Which took me forever to learn, to get right, because I kept wanting to stick that two in there.
Right.
But that's clearly the way either Miller's mother said it or someone that he knew said it.
So,
you know, that was the way the people around him spoke. I had the exact same feeling when doing Blanche, and I had the same feeling when I did Mrs. Malloy in The Matchmaker. Everyone had their own turns of phrases that were particular to both the place in the country where they were and the time period in which they were living. So it's a unique little walk through history when you hear certain phrases, like G is a word used continually in this particular show, GEE.
Mm-hmm.
Not something you hear a lot now, but it was very prevalent then.
Gee.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, but it really does take, I mean, when you have writing that is as exquisite, I think, as this writing is, because there's nothing extra in it. It's just enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You absolutely want to learn it to the letter because you want to do it justice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nicely said. Anne in Monona. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Well, I haven't seen this production yet, but I certainly hope to. And my impression, you sort of hinted at this, maybe you actually said it, but is that Arthur Miller believed that the American dream, as it's posited by, you know, in just society in general, then and now maybe too, is not really attainable by anyone. And, you know, it's so materialistic that it's almost not worth having. For instance, Biff, you know, the cool guy is so shallow, you know, that I have a feeling that if Arthur Miller were alive today, he would think that he would write a play about so-called globalization and what it's doing in treating people, everybody who isn't in charge, you know, isn't a billionaire, as just cogs in somebody else's wheel.
And I'm going to hold you there. We've got, I don't know where that's coming from. Whoopsie. Oh, it's coming from another line. Tracy, are you there? No, I thought, yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Anne. We're okay now. We have to call Tracy back because something happened with the line and I couldn't figure out where that sound was coming from. I'm sorry if I interrupted you. Go ahead, Anne. Anne?
Hmm?
Oh, no. Okay. Go ahead, Anne. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it seems to be fading out, but, you know, like The Crucible. I think Arthur Miller was very... You know, he saw the flaws right from the beginning in American society, and he really expressed them in a poignant way.
Brian.
Certainly did. Well, the American dream, although Tracy spoke earlier that, you know, everyone everywhere wants well for their children, but the idea of the actual term American dream, if I'm not mistaken, was coined in the 1930s when the idea of your child making a better profession, making better money, of course, we always wish they did well, but that keeping up with the Joneses thing sort of started up, and commercialization did feed into it, and a lot of should came in, and I need to do this, I need to acquire that, I need to buy this and buy that house and have that many cars, and it did kind of become a bit of an unfair thing to the middle class, a middle class at that time that was thriving in the 40s. But a lot of debt started to get acquired and a lot of failure if you didn't get ahead. So Miller was really ringing that bell well with this play. And I agree. I think if Miller were writing now, he'd be writing about several political situations in this world.
What do you think Miller is saying about the acceptance of immorality, of bad behavior, of lying, of stealing, etc.? There's a lot of that with Willie and with his sons in this play.
Well, I think that he's, how do I say it? I don't think he's making a big statement about, you know, there's an affair that happens in the play. I don't think he's making a moralistic story about that. But he is tapping into what is a common mistake that many, many, many people have made. And I think he's illustrating the fact that Willie is lost. Willie didn't grow up with a father. His father left before he could even remember him. He had an older brother that took off right away. He was brought up by his mother, of which we do not hear much. He's a guy that's catching the world as he can. And I think he didn't grow up with a lot of morals. I don't think he grew up with much guidance. Mm-hmm. And he latched on to a profession where charm and personality could win the day. And when the charm and personality starts to leave you, then he found himself empty-handed and looked for approval and looked for all those other signs of you're doing all right, you're liked, you know, you're well-liked, you're successful. And it turns out that the one big mistake that Willie makes 15 years before is really what separates his son from him. And he encourages his son to go be a charismatic football star, and he thinks that once they win the championship game of the city of New York, that his name will sound like a bell in all the business offices, and his career will be made. But it's a shallow way to go about that American dream. It's sort of unearned. It's going on a shoe shine and a smile.
Exactly.
It's not actual education. It's not actual learning, and it's not morally right either.
I was thinking about Linda some. Well, a lot, actually, about all of these characters, Tracy. And I'm wondering if it is a different era. There are some holdovers, certainly, now. But I really was thinking about if the play were written again today, we'd see some of it. I think we would see a different kind of role, perhaps, from Willie's wife, the character you play. Do you think?
I hope so. I hope so. She's not in a position to be of much help,
right,
in the places where she could be of the most help. She's not in a position to add income to the family,
mm-hmm,
where they desperately need it. Williams has created a woman who, not Williams, I'm sorry, Miller has created a woman who never puts herself first.
Mm-hmm.
Not ever, ever. the most selfish thing you see Linda do in the entire play, I think, is mend her own stockings. It's the only display of anything that seems even remotely linked to vanity, but I don't even think it's vanity. I think it would be socially unacceptable for her to go to the grocery store with big ripped stockings, so she just mends them and mends them. But, you don't... There's not much in the play that would indicate that she puts herself first in any way, shape, or form. She puts her husband first, most definitely, and she tries to put her children first, I think, when they're younger.
Mm.
But, you know, the displays of that are in that she is always feeding them, cleaning for them, doing their laundry,
mm-hmm,
mending their clothing, paying the bills. She's the accountant in the house. She's the one who has to go to the grocer and make a deal. You know, if you give me two pieces of meat today, I can pay for it a week from Wednesday.
She's
the one who has to actually do those embarrassing things and live through that.
Let's welcome more phone calls in a moment. We're talking, we do every year, it's always fun to do this, talking with actors from American Players Theater, the American classic Death of a Salesman, and we're speaking with the actors who are playing Willie Loman and Linda Loman. Brian Manny and Tracy Michelle Arnold are with us. Our phone number, 800-486-8655 is our number, and thanks for your call. More calls from you in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go next to Jerry in Sparta. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I were privileged to be at APT last Wednesday night and see the performance of Death of a Salesman and to see Ms. Arnold and Mr. Manny in a phenomenal, phenomenal portrayal of Willie and Linda Loman. For us, APT is magical. This production took us to a different place, a different time, a different era. But yet as we were leaving and walking down the hill, we said, this story is today. It's who we are today. It's what we're all experiencing today. I love Ms. Arnold's comments. It's not the American dream. It's the humanitarian dream that we expect a better life for the next generation. And find it sad when we can't achieve that, when we see our children not perhaps being the perfect children we wanted them to be, and realizing we're older, and as we come to the winter of our lives, looking back, reflecting on things we did well, on things we could have done better, and on things we never had a chance to do. And these two actors and the other actors last Wednesday night, they brought a tear to many of our eyes. They made us appreciate live theater, and thank you for that very much.
Thanks.
I'll hang up now.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks very much for the call. Well, it makes people cry after a week after they've seen the show, Tracy.
My goodness.
Yeah. Well, that's bringing something to the stage, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, to lighten things up before I start getting really sad here, too. I want to just talk about being an actor in that setting, to be outside. I mean, how often are you outside in a theater doing a play like this? There must be something, you know, the stars out above you, the sun in the afternoon, the moon at night, all of that, the birds. There must be something just, I don't know, what is it like to be doing all of this outside?
It's a gift, first of all.
Yeah.
I just read this little brief study that said that if you spend an hour of your time in an outdoor location without any technology around you, you know, so walking in the woods, hiking in the mountains, swimming in the ocean,
mm-hmm.
something like that, that the part of your brain that can erupt into psychological disorder shuts down. So it's psychologically healthy for you to be out in the woods, is what I've gleaned from that. And I thought, well, that just makes me one of the luckiest people on the planet, because I get to work at what I love to do, but I also get to do it in a setting that is good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, and that's a wonderful thing, but I have found that particular stage, we have an 1,150-seat outdoor amphitheater, that stage has been a great teacher to me, an acting teacher, because we have to take it not just night by night, but minute by minute according to what the weather is doing. So if the weather is, we just opened An Ideal Husband the other night in one of the hottest, most humid nights I've ever performed in. So it felt like acting it in a bathtub.
Oh, that was hard. Yeah.
But it's hard to project through such a sound. So
uh-huh.
It's a great vocal teacher, this space, because it teaches you to act with wind and humidity. And we have to act in the rain sometimes. We act with mosquitoes eating us. We act with bats swooping around. We act in bright sun or in very chilly temperatures. And the idea of being present and in the moment is something a lot of actors really strive for. And in a theater that is outdoors and has this extra element of the elements,
mm-hmm.
it forces you to be in the moment. If you're not paying attention to the fact that the wind just kicked up 5 miles an hour and you have to speak over that or they're not going to hear the story, then you're not really present. Mm. So it's a wonderful acting teacher, that space. I'm very grateful for it.
I'm really struck, actually, by, Brian, the number of people who have already seen the show. It didn't open all that long ago. And the number of people, you're just getting really heartfelt reviews from everybody who's called in. Do you sense that in the audience? Is there something you're trying to do on stage with the audience? Do you get the sense from them that they're experiencing it the way people have expressed when they called in today?
Well, it's funny. With a comedy, you always know right where you are when they're responding. And although there is some, you know, there are some lighter moments in this play, and there are moments that are very humanly recognizable between Linda and Willie and between the kids and all. And so you know they're there then. But when things start to get heavy, I can kind of feel it now when they're with us.
Mm-hmm.
We did our first preview was rained out, but our second preview, I was so busy doing what I had to do, I could get absolutely no read from the audience. And then our next show was the opening, and I felt like I had more command on it, and I could sense what they were feeling. Sometimes it's not always a sound. Sometimes it's a feeling. You know they're there. Sometimes it's how quiet they are in listening to you, that you know they're there.
Right.
And the greatest satisfaction at the end of the day is, at the end of the play, is knowing you told a story well, that they got the story that Miller had written. And that is the most... I am tired at the end of the show, but I'm elated because I feel that so far, and I knock wood as I say it, we're telling the story well. And the message got across.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to respond to that, Tracy?
I want to tell you that there are seats available for every performance of that.
Yes.
Space.
All right.
And speaking about, I
would love to see more people out there. We have a show tonight.
Oh, you do? Okay. All right.
We have a talk back after the show.
Good.
The actors in the show will be sitting out there and answering questions face to face. And I would just love if any of your listeners are listening to this and they haven't seen it and they're thinking, gosh, maybe I'd like to. I sure wish you'd come, especially if you've never been to APT.
Yes.
It's supposed to be a perfectly beautiful night tonight. Pack a picnic, bring a bottle of wine, bring your friends, bring your parents, and come and see a play and have a nice discussion on your way home.
Yeah, you can have one rip-roaring conversation on the way home, huh?
Yeah, well, you could, certainly.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it will make you reflect on all the positives that are in your life. And it'll give you a renewed sense of how you can attack your life afresh and look at life in an optimistic manner and figure out how to talk to the people that you love and tell them that you love them and enjoy your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think this play can do for you.
Yeah.
So I hope people will come out and see it.
Well, I hope so, too, and it's good to know you have tickets. It would be a perfect night to go tonight. It's
absolutely
perfect weather.
Absolutely beautiful tonight.
Yes, good for performing, good for sitting in the audience. And it's playing through September 16, and am I right about that, September 16?
You are correct. It's within the repertory, though, so we're one of 9 plays.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different nights every week. And,
right.
But tonight we're playing, and you can go to the website, AmericanPlayers.org, and try to get yourself a ticket.
All right.
Love to see you.
All right. Thank you both so much for being with us. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Our thanks to Brian Manny, who's playing Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman, Arthur Miller's masterpiece, which he's written several of them, but this is a big one. He is in his 17th season at APT, and he was with us along with Tracy Michelle Arnold, who plays Linda Loman. It's her 17th American Players Theater season as well. And I just feel like I'm kind of lost in the past here, too, with Rich calling in about Randall Duck Kim, who I interviewed so many years ago, and the fact that he remembered that, and I'm thinking about the whole history of that theater and so happy that it's around still and doing such extraordinary work and giving a place for very talented, outstanding performers to be able to do their craft year after year, going on 40 years now. So thanks very much to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, to American Players Theater for still being around, and to the actors for being with us. Tomorrow we'll be with you again. We'll be talking about high school. It should be an interesting hour. Why is it that we remember those teenage years so vividly? We will talk about that, and then we'll look at ages and throughout history what people have done at different ages, kind of a celebration of 1 to 100, hour one of our program. Thank you for listening.